Welcome to GoToGal, episode number 223. As always, I'm your host, Jacqueline Malone, and today we have Tracy Sheriff back on the podcast. Now, you might remember my conversation interview with Tracy from, I think it was about 2 years ago, where we talk about what to think about, how to take your process, your service, your way of working with clients and getting them results, and turn that into a framework for a course. It's a really good episode. We'll link to it in the show notes. So definitely, if you have not listened to that, it is worth going, digging that back up and listening. Now, after that conversation, Tracy and I started talking, and we ultimately ended up hiring Tracy Farnoosh and I did to help with the Pays to Podcast course. We'd already had the course, but we brought Tracy in to really help us take it to the next level. And oh, did she. So that is why I have Tracy back. You know what? This is definitely going to be a two-parter. So our conversation today, I really wanted Tracy here to get her insight, her process, what she's doing with her clients now too. So it's not just about how we revamped our own course with Pays to Podcast, but also just how this is applying in other ways. But I know that there's going to be questions about what we've done with Pays to Podcast or just that come up from this conversation. I know at the end, I was like, oh, I wish I had another hour with you, Tracy. There was so much to cover. So I am going to record an episode that'll go live the following week from this episode. So if you are listening when this is live and you have a question, send me a DM on Instagram and I will try to get that answered for you next week. And if you're listening in the future, you could still send me a DM with a question, but it won't be in this exact episode. That said, Tracy and I dive into what we did to take that course specifically. And I don't have the exact percentage, but I will tell you, when we first took our group program curriculum and turned it into a course, we had good feedback. We had happy students, but they weren't launching, especially not in the time that we wanted. And that is something that Farnoosh and I felt really passionate about changing. And with our work with Tracy, we were able to, with our next launch, I think it was 89 students that we had live, and over 50 of them launched in 8 weeks, which is just like amazing in terms of the online course space. And people measure, did they finish the curriculum, but to not only go through it, but to actually launch your podcast in 8 weeks. And this wasn't a high ticket program. This was a course. So to be that invested, how did we get them to do that? What was the big change? That's exactly what Tracy and I are talking about. So if you are looking to get your, which I hope you're looking to get your clients and students bigger results, we're going to talk about that too. But it's not just for them. It's also for you, right? Like that word of mouth, those happy clients, those happy students. You can't grow your business if you don't have happy, successful clients and students. Especially not with, I'm going to say in 2022, but if you are listening in the future, even more so. So this is important and something that I care deeply about. And I'm really excited to be sharing some of the behind the scenes here with you. So you can start thinking about your own programs, your own curriculums, your own courses, and how you can help your students and clients get better results too. Oh, and quick side note, we are not currently launching Pays to Podcast right now, but we do have it available evergreen. So if that is something that you are interested in, you're like, yes, I want this course. I want to launch a podcast. I'm ready to take action. We don't have a live program, but we do have that content, that step-by-step process and all of those actionable items for you ready to go in an evergreen course. You can go to pays2podcast.com to get that. And if you don't want to remember that whole link, you could just go to the show notes. All right, let me formally introduce you to Tracy and then we'll get things going. Tracy Sheriff is a coach who helps entrepreneurs, experts, and service-based professionals scale their businesses online. Her podcast, Scale Your Course, focuses on helping her audience in the process of designing and delivering impactful learning experiences for their communities. A lifespan educator with experience teaching and consulting learners from birth through adulthood, Tracy has a background rooted in early childhood education and an MA in education from Central Michigan University, where she developed extensive knowledge specifically in the area of adult education. Her expertise guides her work with clients to ensure the curriculum of their courses and online programs are effectively designed and ready to be efficiently delivered for maximum impact. All right, let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Tracy. Tracy, I'm so excited to have you here today.
Well, I am just thrilled that you asked me to join you again. Always enjoy conversations with you. We always have a good laugh and we share some great ideas and bang some things around. So this is awesome.
Yes. Well, I reference you and your work and the work that we have done together quite a bit. And when I'm talking to my own clients or students and probably on the podcast too. And I was thinking about, okay, it's really interesting how specifically with Farnoosh and I's program Pace to Podcast, we work together and redoing, totally revamping that program, which led to incredible results. We'll get into that. But more than that, that experience with working with you has shifted the way that I just approach everything when I'm working with students, specifically in programs or courses. But either way, with one-to-one, it's a little bit different. But with anything where I'm in a teaching type of environment, you've shifted the way that I think. And I've been wanting to talk about this more on the podcast. And I probably could have done a solo episode and just referenced you a bit, but I'm like, this would be so much more fun to have you here and talk through it and for you to share your perspective and your things. Because I can translate things through my own interpretation of how they happened or what they are, but like, why not bring in the expert? Because the course, the online training, group program industry is booming and growing, but there's also a lot of problems with it. And you are one of the people that I look to that's able to take this industry and take it to a next level without, not like a next level of making more money necessarily with it, but that's the outcome, but the next level of taking it up a notch of we're not just throwing something together. As there's more courses in this space, as it's growing, I think consumers are going to be more educated. They're going to be looking for more things. They're going to be expecting more things. So what people might have gotten away with a couple of years ago with slapping together a course, I think that's shifting away from, and there's going to be a bigger expectation as people have gotten burned with courses. I think we've all had those courses where we're like, what did I just pay for? As people have had those experiences, they're going to be more thoughtful as they're investing in the future and what we can take to heart of how can we make our programs more impactful and all of that. So how are we taking our content, putting it into a program, but making sure that the people that are going through that are getting the best results? Okay, so before we dive into all of that, I would love from your perspective, what are people doing wrong with courses? What are you seeing either from your own personal experience or people coming to you? Where is the course industry going wrong right now?
Great question. I think that there's, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly that there's a lot of challenges in the industry and sometimes you can't see them on the surface, right? And that's the struggle. And then when people get into your course and then they're struggling, we can't always figure out the reasons why, and there's gaps and all kinds of things are going on there. But I really think that it has a lot to just do with the planning part of it. People are wanting to really rush the process of really thinking this through intentionally. And I think we need to pause a bit and stop rushing our products out into the space. That doesn't mean that I don't agree with the fact that we have to get it out there and test. We do, but there is a process that we can follow that the first time you do it, it might be actually a little bit more painful than if you exercise a muscle. It's going to get easier. But there is a thought process to instructional design that I think is oversimplified, I guess I would say, in this space. So when people are just telling you to identify the problem that you're solving and your solution and break it down into steps and then go teach, there's so much more that needs to be considered as part of that. And I think those of us who've been educators like myself probably already have a sense of that. But teaching isn't exactly as easy as it looks. And we're also in a space where there's so many diverse learners and people that take information in differently and they need to experience things differently that it can be a real challenge. So for me, I think it's about slowing down the process and respecting the process for what it is. It was never designed. True instructional design is not intended to be this slap it together methodology, which is how I think it gets presented sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes.
And even if it's not presented in those words, that sometimes is the outcome of what's being shared, of that oversimplification of how to teach what you know or how to teach your process. If you are not educated in teaching, right? Like if you don't know that part, there's something there that's missing when we have marketers teaching on how to teach, which is a lot of what has happened. So yes, I'm so excited for this conversation and this shift of thinking. And one thing I just want to reinforce too, if someone's like, oh, I'm never going to be able to have a course now because I need to Listen, and you're an example of this right now, Tracy. Maybe you want to share what you're doing with your own group program, but I'm a big fan of, instead of it going right to a course, teach it live, teach it in a group setting, coach it. Because where I have always leaned on with any gaps in my courses, let's say, especially before we had worked together, was, well, if I'm showing up live, whatever questions they have, whatever struggles they're having, I'm there to support them, especially in smaller groups and group coaching programs. And that's why those students were able to have success. And with one-on-one clients, it's very different. But when you're creating something that you're not going to be working as intimately with people, that's when you really need to go deeper and more thorough, because you're designing it for all of these different potential learning types and personality types that are going to go through it. And you don't necessarily want them asking you every single question. And how can you support them through that process more? So with your group, you're doing a group program, it's very meta, but what's your approach to that, since you're doing this in your own business, but through a different lens because it's group coaching? Like, how are you starting with it? Because that could be an empowering place of like, okay, this is a way to get started with it.
Sure. So I started really lean, actually, and I'm building as I go. So I mentioned before about having that outline and really just going to town with it. That's exactly how I started. But the caveat is that when I sit down every week to figure out where we're at, because I'm always evaluating like how we did, and I do kind of a coaching teaching hybrid model. So I teach a concept that's related to the design in a structured way. So there's a framework that we follow. I teach the content and then open it up for questions and hot seats and stuff like that, so people can work through. And that's where I think the ahas are really coming through, is people are actually working on their stuff while I'm teaching. I didn't even know this at the time, but they'll say, okay, I've got it. And I was thinking, I'm going to teach, they're going to ask questions, and then they're going to go and do. But no, they're actually so inspired by the frameworks that I'm teaching them that they're actually doodling and doing their thing while they're listening, because I can tell they're listening because they're actually getting the result. They're actually doing the thing and blowing me away with what they're sharing at the end of the class, not even the next week, which is where I thought the homework would come, like the next week, right? And we'd go over it. How did it go for you? Where'd you get stuck? But anyways, I mean, I could probably get us all down all kinds of rabbit holes here. But for me, it is teaching live. It is, yes, I had to outline it. But when I plan the weekly content, it's very intentional for me about thinking about who's in the group, what are they trying to accomplish? What are the differences between them? Because I can't just speak to one. I have to speak to all. What do they already know? What do they need to understand? And what do they need to do? And that's the big thing. I take them through a know, understand, and do framework in all of my lesson planning. And then I teach them to do the same for their clients. So we use an empathy map to really help understand who their target audience is. And then we work through the problem that we think that they have, or a series of problems, and narrow that down. But then we actually refine the problem into an issue, because the challenge is people are sometimes trying to solve like surface level problems and they're not necessarily drilling down. So there's a few prompts that I give them to work through to the issue. And then it becomes positioning that as, what is it they're actually wanting? That's the issue, but what is it they actually want? So you're not selling the problem, you're selling the solution. So this is all stuff that you know, I know, but it's been giving them the tools and the framework to follow to do that. And it's work that I've had to do for myself as a teacher too. Like teaching in higher education, I don't have to sell my courses to students. The universities and the colleges sell the courses to the students. They're there to become employed, like this, have the skills to be employed. So yes, we try to write dynamic course descriptions and we want them to be excited, but in the end, they just have to come because that's what's required in order to get the certificate. When you're in the online space, like you're selling yourself and you're selling your product, it's a whole different ball game. So I've had to really figure that part out myself, like take the teaching and the marketing. Like you mentioned, marketers teaching people how to teach. There's teachers that need marketers to help them sell their courses, right? So
absolutely, right. Yes, for sure. And so, some marketers are teachers. That was a very broad statement that I said. But I think to highlight that there's that gap of perspective that we all have and how much we can learn from each other. And as we're evolving in this industry, we should want to improve we should have this desire to like, how do I make it better? How can I help people get better results and be moving forward with it? So even if someone has had success with their programs, like, how do you take it to that next level? That's the way that I think with things. And as an industry, I hope we're thinking like that too. So we're all growing together. Okay. There's so much there that you just said. One thing I want to just highlight with that is I love how you have done this in your own, like your walk on the walk of, okay, so I didn't just slap together a course, but I was able to put together this program, teach it live. We never know how people are going to, right? So that's why doing it live is so important, I think, because you're like, oh, I thought they would do this over the next week and that would be their homework, but they're doing it live. So you're able to get that instant feedback, but also as you're in the future going back and saying like, oh, okay, that could be something that, you know, maybe they don't need a whole week to do that. They can be doing it more in the moment, or I don't know, that might impact how you design it in the future because you're seeing how the real people in front of you are interacting with the content. So yes,
I definitely agree. I see an opportunity to look more at in the next round or two, the pre-work part of it. So if they're really keen on doing the work on the call, how can I already have them in the zone and prepared with some things? They won't have all the answers, but they'll have enough to come with that it will even expedite that aha for them. I mean, there's always people that are quicker to pick things up and take action, but they're the ones that are going to inspire the others. This is possible. And they share in that moment. So it's not what I expected, but it's been really great because like you said, that instant feedback for me, I've totally flipped from kind of how I described how I was going to run the calls. I flipped it based on their interactions with me and that group. And maybe the next group will be a little bit different and that's okay. And I think that's where responsiveness comes in, just understanding. So yeah, I 100% agree. Teaching it live, you don't have to have all the answers. When I help people build out curriculum, we are still building out a shell because we want to still have that flexibility. But we want to be able to be thinking really intentionally about why the content is in there. Why am I choosing this? Why am I choosing this now? How do I organize this? Is there gaps? So there can be gaps in knowledge. There can be gaps in skills. There can be gaps in motivation. There's so many places where people might get stuck in the process. So when we look more deeply at our audience and then the problem and solution, and then what is it they actually need? Because sometimes what we think they need isn't what they need. So there's just a series of questions that I run people through. And the feedback that I'm getting is that they're just gaining that extra bit of clarity and confidence that they didn't have before. And now we're moving into, like, we're halfway through the program. We're moving more into the actual creation part of it where we're not building slide decks and stuff yet. That's where a lot of people go wrong too, is they get less planning time, more content creation. And I do it really lean. I just use a Google Doc. I am using slide decks. I wasn't going to use slide decks, but I can whip them together pretty quickly. But you don't even need slide decks. If you're teaching a concept or a framework, just have an image, like something visual for them to look at. So you might only need 3 or 4 slides in order to make your teaching effective, if you even need that. So you can do this really lean, getting out of the gate. And then once you know what lands with people and how it lands, then you can invest the time and maybe money if you're outsourcing into creating all the pretty things. I do have a lot of clients who like the pretty things. So I will compromise with people on that if they really want to go all out. But for me, it's also a really great opportunity to model what a good slide deck really entails, like how much text to put on the screen or on the slide, where to add in an image, where that's really needed. And I think that's a skill. You have that skill, Jacqueline. I've seen your slide decks. You have a natural knack for taking your thoughts and ideas and putting it into a framework and then creating a visual image of that and just keeping your slide decks really simple so that it's not overwhelming people. I knew that from the start when I started working with you, that that was not an area that you needed any advice or support with.
Well, thank you for that. I don't know if it's natural for me though, but it has evolved. I will say for me, teaching has never, it wasn't like a natural skill set for me. Other people might disagree. I think because I have ADHD or because of the way my brain works, I don't think linearly. I'll remember like us having a Voxer conversation and you were telling me like, oh, there's this. I think you sent me the link to the peanut butter and jelly video, which you could probably explain better than I can. But you're like, oh, just think of it like if you were this video where you're making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and what are the steps and break down the steps. And I think this was a big aha moment for both of us because I can't think like that. Like, I don't know how to do that. I can see with the peanut butter and jelly sandwich, like, okay, I could force myself to come up with the steps for the peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And there's different things that you're teaching, right? So with some of the things that I'm teaching, they are very intuitive to me. And I find that I do best, like the things that I'm the best at, I'm intuitive with. And even Tetris, which is a side note, but I like, it's an interesting, like my husband and I both started playing Tetris at the same time. And he was so like worlds better than me. I'm not a natural like spatial relationship person, but I really liked it. And it was very calming for me. So I started playing more. And now my high score for the 3 minute one is 56,000 or something. And his is like 16,000. He's like, oh my God, if we do the 3 minute one, because otherwise it could be a long time. Now I'm so good at it. And I'll even do it science. So it's like he's talking to me and I'm playing. And he's like, you're not listening. You're playing Tetris. I'm like, no, I listen better. But it's I don't even have to think about it. I just intuitively know where the things go now. But when I was first starting and I was very intellectual about like, okay, well, I'm trying to think what shapes go where, I'm slower in the process. And so that was something interesting that I've observed about myself and the way my brain works. So that process of how do I take something that I'm doing that I'm not really conscious of all the steps and pull it apart and figure out what all those steps are and put them in order, like that, my brain doesn't work like that. And I think because I know my brain doesn't work like that, I always had a little bit of a fear of, is this going to make sense to people? Am I saying it in the right way? And what is the right order? And that's where frameworks have really helped me to give those like guardrails of, we can talk about it within this context. And it gives me a place to put all the information that maybe isn't necessarily linear. So with frameworks, there's like an overarching framework sometimes for the whole course. But like you were saying, you were teaching within frameworks. And a lot of times there's frameworks within the smaller things that we're teaching throughout the course. Let's talk about that. I'm sure this brought up a lot of things for you too. But how do you see the frameworks? How does that fit in? Or how should we think about frameworks?
Oh, good question. I mean, I have probably realized as a learner that frameworks really help me make sense of information that's being given to me. So whether that is creating some funky little acronym or making it just really visual, whatever the framework is or how you choose to present it. But when people are taking in lots of information, okay, I'll use the example I use with my group program. And actually, I'm going to give credit where this is due. Julie Dirkston is an author who wrote a book. Can't remember the name of the book offhand, but it's something like How People Learn. And I'll give you the information so you can post it in the show notes below. It's an older book, but a super gem of a book. And the example that she provides that I've shared with my group program members is when you are a new learner, you have a messy closet. You might have bits and pieces of information. You've got some accessories over here, some bigger items and that you maybe, you know, staples that you understand and you can work with. But it's really messy, whereas the teacher is coming with this really nice, neatly organized closet. Everything has its place. They know how things connect together, how to dress an outfit up and down and all of the things. And so frameworks, I believe, help you go from that messy closet to that really nice, neat, organized place. Everything has a place that you can demonstrate how those things are connected. Instructional design, as someone who's learned it, not just by doing, but actually gone to school and explored theory and all of those somewhat dry things, is all based on frameworks. So within each stage of instructional design, I was taught in frameworks. And so those are the frameworks that I bring forward. So while, yes, I have sort of my own unique way of delivering the program, I bring my personality into it. I bring the things that were like my own ahas and hope that there'll be ahas for them. I'm borrowing a lot of frameworks from people before me, academics, people that have already done a lot of this research. So everything I teach is evidence-based, right? So there are times when I'll take that information and put it into something a little bit more playful, a little less boring. But ideally, I'm teaching them the things that I was taught because it is a very, it's evidence-based, it's scientific, it leans on how we think, how the brain works. I can't make that stuff up, right? But yeah, frameworks are just a way for people to organize information. And so if you, as the teacher, benefit from the framework to help teach it, your students are going to benefit from that framework to help learn it. So while there'll always be people that could just take in the information, make their notes, and create their own framework, most of us need some level of support with making sense of information.
Yeah, you helped me realize that about myself. You're so great at frameworks. That was never something I realized before, but I think because my brain is all over the place, which has its benefits and its disadvantages, but because it may feel like, and I'm very comfortable with that brain all over the place, but when I'm trying to explain things, it's so helpful to have a framework. Or when I'm trying to remember things, it's helpful to have a framework. And in working with you, it's encouraged me to take that even further of, oh, okay, like everything can have a framework. One of the things I'm thinking about is a lesson that we added in Pays to Podcast and we've added a lot, but we should probably dive into that a little bit more. But in working through, like, where are people getting stuck? So we already had Pays to Podcast, and you were the literal perfect person to do this because this is your expertise and you had taken our first round of Pays to Podcast. Now, I will say, before our first round of Pays to Podcast, Farnoosh and I had been teaching in a group program, a small, intimate group program for probably a year and a half to 2 years. We had run this. But with Pays to Podcast, it was very different because we were setting it up so it was going to be a bigger group. It wasn't going to be as intimate with the coaching. And also, we had had feedback from our audience that they were really interested in how we had both monetized our podcasts. And so where we were looking at that as something that was higher level, we're like, okay, what can people do from the beginning? What can they do from the beginning to start thinking about not just how they have this podcast, but how it's really a growth engine for their business, and looking at how we had both done that and done that differently. So while we had been teaching it for a while, Pays to Podcast was all new content and we created it for them. So then the second time we were doing it, which is when we were working together, one of the things that we had realized people were getting stuck on mid-course, so we hadn't even planned this ahead of time, but people were asking, they were getting frustrated or asking or just coming up with really bad ideas for titles for their podcast. And this is something that was very intuitive to me of like, oh, that's a good title, that's a bad title. Like, I don't know, you just know, right? Oh, but apparently people don't just know. So I'm like, okay, how do I teach this? And that was something that was like, okay. And I don't remember our exact conversation, but I'm sure we had discussed this. And I was like, okay, well, what are good titles? So listing those out of, okay, well, let's go to popular shows. Let's go to shows that I like. What am I drawn to? And listing out what are examples of really great titles. And then from there, okay, how can we organize them? And so what are the different styles of titles? And that really helped take something that was very, very intuitive for me of, I don't know, people should just know, right? It's good or it's bad. But how do we teach this? If, okay, here's examples. And now let's, and then I gave them all fun names of, okay, there's this type of title and this type of title. And then we were able to pull in examples and added in just on the fly during this round, this live round, this 20-minute lesson of, okay, like you're struggling with your title. Here's what to consider. Here are the different categories of titles and examples. And then people could kind of put themselves in one of those buckets and get some ideas and inspiration. But it took something that really had no framework per se. And not that this was like a fancy framework, but it just organized the information that allowed me to teach something that didn't feel teachable at first.
Awesome. I like what you said there. Didn't feel teachable. And I think it's because when something comes really easy to you, we just assume, even though on some intellectual level, we know that everybody's not good at the same things, we catch ourselves saying like, doesn't everybody do that or just know that? Isn't that, like you said, intuitive? Why do I need to teach you that? But what you did was identify a gap. And that often is why people will come to me, especially if they're people that have already had programs that they've ran. People are getting stuck somewhere and they can't figure out why or what they could do differently. But that's a perfect example of you really looking critically about what you do and trying to understand what they needed and then put it together in this framework for them. So as simple as it was, I mean, I know that we had a lot of success getting people over that hump by providing that because they're thinking, I need a title, I need a title, I need a title. And that can be the thing that held them back from actually taking action on all the other things because they get stuck.
Yes. And that is something too, where in the past, the people would share examples and we would maybe say the best one or combine. Basically, Farnoosh and I would come up with the titles in a smaller group. People might say, here's my five ideas, and we would take a little bit of two of them and combine it together. Or knowing their business intimately enough, we could suggest ideas. And between the two of us, we had named a lot of our prior students' podcasts. And I don't think that's something I had considered before. And that's something that in a smaller group or in a coaching relationship, it's like, oh, I'm good at that. I can just do that. But when you're trying to teach it, and now we were in a situation where we had 90 students in a live round, we can't name all of them. And for what we were charging, we definitely were not going to be able to name all of them. And, so yes, we were able to, in that round, we were running it live in the sense that we had a Facebook group and we're answering questions and had live coaching calls. But even with that, with a group that size, we just could not give that level of attention. So having some type of a framework, some type of a way to take what was intuitive to us, right, and turn it into something other people could take and do themselves, which is literally probably the concept of a course. But I think it's those little things that we notice or we think within our own coaching or consulting, oh, I can't teach people that. I think at this point, most of our listeners are familiar with the concept of frameworks, but literally you could have frameworks for everything. And it, or just like, I guess, would you consider this still a framework or would you call it something else?
I would call it a framework. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So these are the five types of titles that we recommend, right?
Yeah.
And don't do the Jacqueline show. That's like, and we had a lot of students that wanted to just do like their name show. And unless you're Brené Brown, and even Brené Brown doesn't have the Brené show. So I know people have podcasts that have that. Yeah, I don't recommend that. We could have a whole episode about why I don't recommend that, but I don't recommend it. And that's why having this framework allowed us to really teach people, one, why not to do that, but also, okay, do this and here's how, and here's how to come up with your own title.
Here's another benefit of frameworks. Once you teach it and people are learning from it and you're seeing that they're having success, then you know you've nailed it. When you do that, and you also had a group that went along with Pace to Podcast, what ends up happening, and I can't really recall how much of this went on with this particular framework, but I just know with frameworks in general, that gives other group members or people participating the opportunity to support each other because they have this framework that they can use, and then they can use that to infuse conversations in groups and give each other support. So then you're not necessarily the one offering all of the advice. People are chiming in and supporting one another. And that's assuming you have a community that goes along with whatever product that you've created. But people that really latch onto it, they get that quick win or that aha from your framework, then they're going to want to help other people with it as well. It's a tool. So that's how it's a resource, a tool, teaching methodology. Like there's just so many benefits to using them.
Yes. Okay. Let's zoom out a little bit. You had mentioned before this problem solution framework, if you will. But that is a way, and one, as a marketer, that like, yes, sell the solution is going to, selling a solution to a problem that your client or customer or student is already having is a great way to position how you can help them. So in terms of the value of what you're offering, and not just offering information, but offering a solution to a problem, that is a smart way to market it. But it's also a smart way to teach it. So looking at Pays to Podcast, I think this was the biggest shift of the way that I was thinking about the course. And just because we ended up, I think when I brought you on to help with this, I was like, we have the core content, but I knew we needed to make it better. And I will share transparently that our first round of Pays to Podcast, we only had one person launch. Yeah. And I don't think it was even within, I think she launched at 4 months instead of 3 months. But I'm like, okay, it was a small group. It was under 20. We didn't have any refund requests. No one was complaining. Everyone seemed happy, but nobody had launched. Only one person had launched a podcast. Oh, and technically she was my cousin. I don't think that's why she launched the podcast, but the numbers weren't looking great. And so we were now preparing for this bigger launch, and we had affiliate partners. And I knew that there was the potential there. And I knew the work that we had done in the group coaching and all of that was impactful. But I knew there was a disconnect with this round. I wanted to feel really confident about what we were selling and the results that we were going to get our students. One, so we were in integrity within the program, but also that knowing as a marketer, I know if you have happy, successful students, it's one thing if you have happy students, but if you're marketing something about launching a podcast and then nobody launches the podcast, your testimonials are only going to go so far if nobody has podcasts, right? So for us to grow this, I knew we needed those case studies, those success stories, those happy students that were going to tell their friends and help us share the message. So it was all really important to me in looking at how can we take this program and make it better? And this was a key shift of, okay, how do we take this from the way we were teaching it and then completely shift to this outcome focused way, which I think most people probably think they're outcome focused in their course, but take us through that. What does that mean to be, or what's the language that you would use? I think outcome focused, but what does that mean in terms of the whole course and then even within the course?
Sure. So obviously most courses have a destination. Like in your case, you wanted people to be launching. Obviously you wanted them to be launching and monetizing ideally, but getting them launched was a big part of that. When it comes to the outcome, what does the destination actually look like? So when they get to what's their pot of gold at the end of the rainbow and making that really actionable for people using those action verbs, like launch is an action verb. And it's clear, your example is very clear. So you have your overarching destination that has an outcome that tells that pot of gold, but then for each module, there's outcomes. And then for each lesson, there's objectives to reach the outcome. So that's where people, they sometimes just stop at the larger, broader overview and forget that all of the steps in between, they should be actionable and results focused or outcomes focused. And so when I teach people this work, it's like, okay, what's your overarching? Then we go into their main topics or their main steps to their process, because a lot of people have a process, even if they don't realize that they have a process. What do they need to do first? Not everything is as linear as that. There are some courses you can design that within the framework, maybe a student that comes in only needs step 3 because they already have step 1 and step 2. And maybe they already kind of have step 5, but they're not getting the results that they need because that step 3 is missing or whatever the phase of that is. But within those modules, break those down into lessons, and those lessons also need objectives, like I said. So you can end up with this sort of map of like mind map of all of these connections that you're trying to make. But the key is making it actionable. So using those action words. And here's, I think, something that ends up happening is people stop at the knowing and understanding. So they want to give lots of information, but they don't necessarily create objectives or outcomes that are actually applying that information. So in higher education, for example, in Ontario, anyways, the way that we're coached and taught is if it doesn't hit that applied level, it's not good enough, right? So we need to not just give information, we need to have them doing something with that information. And there's also different levels of doing. So when they're doing something with that information, they can be at the highest level creating something. So in your case, with Pays to Podcast, they're like creating a podcast. They're launching it, but they have to create it. So there's actually an outcome within an outcome. So you can't have anything to launch if you haven't created something yet. When it comes to like taking in information and making decisions and critically analyzing and all of those things, those are all like higher order actions. So we need to be going beyond the thinking part of it. This is the other piece that I get frustrated with. A lot of courses, they're doing is reflection. So it's like asking a question, write down your answers and your thoughts, but then they're missing what's the next step to that. Okay, so now you've thought about it. So that's a doing thing. Like reflection is application, but then what's the next step? Because people often end up not taking an X step because it's not clearly laid out for them. So I see this a lot with workbooks. People like write this down, think about this, what's coming up for you. But then the missing link is that next objective or that next outcome. So it's actually not a hard concept. It's a little easier to teach visually, like if I had charts and paper and could draw all this for you. But I think what's most relatable is any goal that you have in your life. If you're looking to eat healthier, then breaking that down into like what's required to eat healthy. I need to even know what healthy foods are. but then I need to be able to know how to go and shop for them. I need to know how to price them out and how to put all those healthy foods into a proper plate. The other thing that reminds me about the salad analogy. So I was taught this in my master's program from one of my most favorite instructors. And she showed us how a lot of times we present information like it's just a salad plate. So you've got your tomatoes, your cucumber, your lettuce, and it's all neatly organized. But then it's in the salad itself where people really start to take all of that information, integrate it together, and then create something. So it's almost opposite to what I said about the closet. So I don't want to confuse people, but it's a different part of the process. So what your first goal with the closet is to take all of that stuff and organize it, but then you want to create the salad out of the salad plate because you want them to be able to actually take all of those bits of information, use them, and go and do something with them. So I think sometimes we just get so focused on the salad plate, but we don't necessarily teach people how that all fits together and how it can taste even better if we presented it differently.
Yeah. Okay. I love this because it's helping me see too. I think with our first version of Pays to Podcast, it was an organized closet. And the way that we had organized the information was, okay, here's the foundational pieces that come up with your, you know, we had our core framework of developing your editorial hook and really that core messaging for what the podcast was. But then it was very organized in a different way. It was like, okay, we're going to talk about all the tech. And then this section, we're going to talk about the launch. And it was organized, but it wasn't organized in a way that was getting them into action and results driven. So it was organized information and it was good information, but what was missing from it was it being structured in a way that was getting people to launch within a certain timeline. And those gaps of, okay, well, what would support someone in implementing? And I think there's a few things here. One, the way we restructured the entire program to be with an outcome of launching within 8 weeks shifted everything, because that allowed us to really cut the fat, if you will, of like, okay, with every single piece of information or lesson in the course, it was, how is this helping them to launch within 8 weeks? And what order do they need to do things in to get them to launch within 8 weeks? And we realized there was a lot of excess information in there. So we're actually able to cut quite a bit. Or as you advised, which I love, just labeling stuff as optional. I'm like, yes. I wouldn't have thought that was an option, right? But when you're prioritizing the information of what do they really need and making it all action-based of, okay, what's their homework? We shifted into sprints. And so what was the homework they needed to do every single week to be working towards this goal? And so that overarching philosophy of, okay, we're getting them to, this is the outcome we want. And that's their, I don't know if this is your terminology or where I got this from, but like the ring the bell moment of like, when do we know they're hitting? Is that your phrase? I don't even know where I got it.
I love
it. But it's like, when are those times where they know that they're having success along the way, right? So when they launch their podcast within 8 weeks, that is a ring the bell moment. They know at the end that they've had that outcome. And we went from having, let's say, 18 students and one of them launching, not even within the time frame of the course, to then having 90 students. Was it 90 students? I'm not looking at my numbers, but I know it was over 50%.
I was going to say 90-ish students. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And of those 50-something of them launched, I'm not looking at the numbers, but I mean, just within 8 weeks. I mean, and if you extend out from that, then I'm sure more have launched too. But that blew my mind of, okay, this is a much bigger group. And this really works. And I was really proud of it when we were delivering it. But then seeing that outcome and that result, of those numbers are unheard of in the industry. I mean, do you know what completion rates are in online
education? Oh my gosh, they're really low. They're so typically bad. Really, really so low. And I mean, there's some strategies that you use too. Like, it was very incentivized. There was sort of a real, I think it was some promotion from you for Noosh or maybe.
Yes. So we incentivize them to launch with. And I think okay, how do we incentivize what we want them to do? So, okay, we want them to launch within 8 weeks. What do they get? So giving something, a bonus or visibility or some type of incentive for them to do that. Not just the structure you probably have an academic way of describing this, right? But it's not just giving them the supporting structure and here's what you're going to do every week and here's resources to help you, but not just giving them that to get them to launch within that timeline, but also the motivation piece of what, okay, here's the tools that you need, but just because they have the tools doesn't mean they're going to do it. So then what's that extra layer of incentive that would motivate them to do it?
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that was a big part of it. I do think taking out some of the content and really identifying like what needed to be done. And the reason for the optional is you always have to ask yourself, is this something that they need to do in order to get the results? And if the answer is yes, then it stays. If the answer is no, then you have to make a decision on what you do with that. And so by putting it in an optional category means that the person who is making really great progress and doing the work and is looking for something more has the option to level up or to advance themselves a little bit more on a deeper level. But it's not going to limit those that don't choose the optional content to actually get the same results. So it's kind of leveling the playing field because we all come with our own learning styles. And some of us, like day one, we're in there, we're looking at the content, we're doing the homework. And others of us are on day six and we're like, haven't even opened the content yet. Anyways, you provided that when we made those decisions with the optional, those that wanted to go deeper could, and those that just could only invest the time into the bare minimum. And the bare minimum still meant they got to launch a podcast and potentially get that incentive. So the other thing about Pays to Podcast that we did, and I don't know if you were planning on going here or not, was we created from that 8-week, like trim the fat program, a 2-week accelerator within the 8 weeks so that those people that were at that midpoint that were feeling behind, we even trimmed it even further to say, okay, you can still win the race. Here's what you need to do. If you're committed, we've got the tools for you and you created a Trello board to help really support them with that. And so there was just so much stuff that went on there. And to think you could take what was a few months programmed, you trimmed it to 8 weeks, and then we were able to trim again with the 2-week accelerator in the middle to catch people up. Amazing.
Yeah. And we had, I think somebody posted she did it all in like a day, which is insane. And that Trello board, I think we had a Trello board for the whole program, but it wasn't as in depth as I did for this 2-week sprint. And then what I've done in retrospect is then I took the, so essentially what we did, and I think this is another thing of running it live, we're seeing that, okay, we were coming down to the last 3 weeks-ish and people really wanted to hit that deadline, but a lot of people felt behind. They were getting discouraged. And what we didn't want is those people to give up at that point and be like, oh, there's no way I could hit this. We really wanted to get them over that finish line. And so what I did is created this 2-week sprint, kind of inspired from the challenge that we had done that got people into the course. We did a catch-up club in the challenge because same thing, people felt behind in the challenge. So I had this catch-up club concept in my head and I was like, okay, well, what if we did a 2-week catch-up club? What would that look like? And how do we take everything that they would need to do on this Trello board and organize it in this 2-week sprint and kind of really hash out then, okay, what really has to get done and in what order? And they did. It got people across the finish line at the end. So I think it caught some of those people that did feel behind. And then it also created a great resource to then expand it back to the 8 weeks. And that's something that we have available now too. Now here's your 8-week sprint. And yeah, you can go to the 2-week sprint if you want. But even if you want to stick with that original 8 weeks of what has to happen when. I think I want to give a little bit of an example of just, okay, where how do we change things, right? So I'm thinking of two parts, I guess. One was the tech. This is probably the most visual in terms of where we put it. But in the first course, all of the tech was in its own module. Your microphone, your hosting, how to edit was all organized in that section. And through going through this process with you, what I started to realize very quickly was, okay, well, the process doesn't fit. Like the tech doesn't all need to be together. In fact, there's some tech that, yeah, like the first thing they should do is buy a microphone because by whatever week we want them recording. And so we want to make sure they actually have a microphone set up. But you don't need a host which people come into the program and they're like already stressing out about hosts. But the reality is you don't need a host until you have something to host. Right. And so if you don't have any podcast episodes recorded, you technically don't need your host yet. And so we were able to move that, the host, to I think like week 7 or something, you know, maybe week 6 or 7, because it just wasn't necessary yet. And so looking at it as, okay, what do they really need when, and being able to move the tech within the sprints and not have to group that all together. So sometimes we categorize something because we're like, oh, this is all the same theme or topic, but that isn't necessarily the best way to teach it.
Right. Yes. Good point. Yeah. I remember that now too. It's all coming back to me.
I know, it was so long ago. I'm going off of memory with this stuff too. The other thing was really, you had me thinking a lot about resources and how do we make it easier for them to take action and implement. And you were saying this with the, you know, we don't just want them reflecting, right? We want them taking action. And looking at our first round of Pays to Podcasts, our launch strategy, and we had a full training on that of, okay, here is your full strategy of what you're going to do for your launch. But then it was on them to go implement that strategy. And so what we had done is broke that up into several steps. And so some of it was moving things around into different weeks, perhaps. So maybe they weren't launching yet, but one of the things we encourage our students to do is have a launch squad to support them. And so, okay, well, maybe they're not launching yet, but they should be reaching out to that launch squad earlier than that launch module, perhaps. And then how are they going to reach out to people? And so creating email templates to help them reach out and what they're going to email people to say, and then taking the launch and going through, okay, here's swipe copy you can use for your social posts. And if you're going to have a Facebook group for your launch squad, here's swipe copy for that. And taking it to that next level. And some people are going to use exactly our swipe and just edit it. And some people are just going to get inspired by it and see how it all fits together. But actually creating, I think there's some Canva templates in there too for them to edit and show their show in different ways there. Having those resources removed that barrier of like, well, what do I say in the email? Or what do I don't, you know, it feels overwhelming when there's all these steps. So to break down the steps further and then to give them those resources that make it really easy to yeah. like take our copy and just insert your stuff, I think that really helped people get into action too. And that's probably an example of how people can be going further with that. Okay, don't just reflect. It's not enough to come up with, and this is a very tangible thing, right? But it's not just enough to come up with the idea of how do we actually get it into action.
Exactly. And what you did there when we looked at what was really needed to help people take that action, because there's always going to be a barrier to that action. It's going to be time. It's going to be confidence. It's going to potentially be the tool or the resource. And so rather than, and this isn't necessarily reflective of your program, but I'll just use it from a podcasting lens, rather than saying, go and research your podcast host, you can narrow it down to, here are the two that I recommend and here's why, choose one, right?
You gave us permission to do that with a couple things of, okay, here's the 2 or 3 mics that we recommend. Here's the 2 or 3 hosts that we recommend. Here's the 2 editing software that we recommend. And to just own that, and that, it sounds so simple, but it took so much pressure off of, we don't need to teach them everything. We just need to teach them what we recommend. Right. And I have a client now that has an expertise in certain types of software. I'm like, just own that. Like, you don't need to be the expert in other software. People don't want to use that. Like, you guide them on what, because you have a reason why you think it's best, right? And so that's really what we did in this. And I think it's simple. And we still had students that were out there and trying out different things. And we're like, okay, that's fine. But we're not going to support that, right? We're not going to, like, we're supportive of them doing it, but we're not going to do tech support of them setting it up or any of that piece, right? Like, we're not, there's no additional information that we're going to provide if they want to go and try something else. But I think sometimes that information overload of there's so many options is really stressful for people. So just narrowing that down, giving them less is actually more.
Yes, that's a great way of looking at it for sure. Yeah. Just eliminating any additional barriers. And by not sort of limiting yourself to one mic, you were able to give them a couple choices, and choice is great for adult learners in particular. They like to have some autonomy and control, and they don't like to just have everything prescribed for them. There are some things you have to prescribe because you know that this is the right thing to do, but offering 10 choices is just overwhelming for people. Or just go and search on Amazon or go and search Google. So yeah, I mean, it's a simple example, but it can be applied to so many things. Sometimes it's just that gap that's missing, or that missing link to them actually taking the action, is because we've missed a small you know, we've made it more complicated for them by not offering that extra layer of support. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to give more of our time. Support doesn't necessarily mean they need the person. They don't necessarily need to talk this out with you. They just need some clear direction. So, and that's where that peanut butter video comes in. And I'll have to look that up. You and I have talked about it a few times, and I know other people I've shared it with. And it's this gentleman who's learning who gets his children to teach him how to make a peanut butter sandwich. Now, he knows how to make a peanut butter sandwich, but he wants them to give him the instructions. And it's like a 4 or 5 minute video, and they try as they might, and he follows their instructions. But at some points, the jam's on the outside of the bread and not on the inside of the bread, and the knife's upside down in the peanut butter jar. And it's all because of the directions that were given to him. And he follows them explicitly. But it's in that moment you realize just how clear sometimes we think we're being, but we're really not being that clear. And so we need to always be thinking about how we break things down into steps, how we give those clear directions, what tools do they need to actually get them out of the gate, and then how are we going to reward them when they do. It can be intrinsic reward as well. I know going through Pace to Podcast, there are some parts where it starts to feel a little hard and you need that sort of extra push to keep going. So rewards can be extrinsic or intrinsic, where people are really like, that just feels so good to be able to put a check mark beside that. So it doesn't have to be overcomplicated. It just needs to be meaningful and intentionally laid out. And it just sometimes requires more effort and work on our part than we think when we think, oh, I'm just going to create a course and there's 6 steps. Okay, I'll just go and teach it. There's actually a lot more involved.
Yes. And that's where I think that permission to, like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but iterating. Permission to iterate. And we're constantly thinking of how can we make it better and getting that feedback. And instead of letting our egos get in the way of, oh, they're just being difficult, or they, you know, it's fine how it is, of really listening and saying, how can we support people? Or instead of getting frustrated that people weren't finishing with 3 weeks left, that they were behind, instead of, you know, because we certainly could have been like, oh, you guys, like, what have you been doing the last, like, how, you know, how did you get so behind? But that's not the way I am anyway. But also, how can we support them? And through that, we came up with a great resource. Or, oh, people are getting frustrated with the titles. How do we come up with a resource? And so I think once we start thinking like that, it shifts everything. And that's why I'm like, okay, this is such a powerful experience with this one course, but it shifted my thinking when it applies to other things too. And just how can we make this more actionable? How can we support our students further? All right. I wish we had more time, Tracy, but we got to wrap up. How can we stay in touch with you?
You can go to my website, tracysheriff.com. I'm also most active on Instagram. Welcome you to follow me there, and certainly reach out to me with any course-related questions in DMs. I'd just love to know what questions are popping up for people, and I can provide a little bit of support there, and then see if there's any way I can help you in a bigger way.
All right. Amazing. All right. Thank you so, so much. It's been fun going down memory lane here too, but just, I'm hoping this is really inspiring for people to see how they can either start this process with everything in mind or take what they already have to the next level.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for inviting me back and taking me down memory lane with you. It's been awesome. It's one of my proudest moments working alongside of you and Farnoosh, and the outcome of Pace to Podcast was, sometimes even at the beginning, it's a bit of an experiment. You don't even know for sure if it's going to land. But when you follow the steps and you do the things that I know are important, and the outcome that you had, it was an amazing experience.
Well, for us too, it really helped us take something that we had and make it so much better, and seeing the success of the students. And it was really instrumental. And I learned so much from that, not just for the one program, but as I've said, it just shifted my thinking. So it's a testament to the work that you do.
Oh, thank you.
Can I just say thank you so much for listening? I don't think I say it enough, but I love that you are here. If you enjoyed today's episode, or if you've been getting value from this podcast, would you do me a quick favor? Head on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. When you leave a rating and review, it basically tells iTunes that they need to spread the word and tell more people about this podcast. And I am on a mission to get the word out. I'm so grateful for your support. We want to make sure to shout you out too. So if you do leave a rating review, keep your eyes and ears open. We will be either shouting out on the podcast or on Instagram stories.